Future Commerce is brought to you by DotMailer. DotMailer is faster, smarter, and better email marketing automation. DotMailer is trusted by thousands of leading brands around the world. You can start your free trial today at dotmailer.com/futurecommerce and be sure to use the offer code FUTURECOMMERCE for 20% off applicable DotMailer packages. Future Commerce is brought to you by Link. Link makes your customers' post-purchase experience something they love through breakthrough innovation in artificial intelligence. Be sure to stick around to the middle of the show for a special offer. You can visit Link online today at letslink.com/podcast. That's letslink.com/podcast. Welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Philip.
And I'm Brian.
And we are back with you live, having two great episodes right behind us. We had two amazing they were kind of landmark episodes for us. What do you think, Brian?
Yeah. I mean, I would say, Nick Vu was just so cool.
Incredible. Yeah. I think he embodied kind of what we have been looking for is that sort of someone who is a sort of a maven in the digital transformation retail space, but who is very grounded in reality and sort of being able to give us really, really actionable data and advice. So really, really cool stuff.
Thank you, Nick. That was great. And then our unbelievable cross podcast action with
is that what it was officially called? I know they'd kind of said that, but I guess that's what we're calling it.
Sure, whatever it is, it was
whatever it was.
some kind of magic with Jason and Scott.
Jason and Scott awesome. From the Jason and Scott Show. So thank you guys for having us on your show, and thank you for coming on ours. And so if you haven't listened to those two episodes, highly encourage you, make sure you go back and listen to those because it just keeps getting better. And thank you to our sponsors who continue to help make it possible. And you, the listener, who makes it possible. And we just remind you real quick, you can take part in today's show by dropping us some feedback, and we want you to do that. So go ahead and hit us up on futurecommerce.fm. Make sure you click into the show link. If you're listening right there, just scroll down and you'll see the comment box below at the bottom of the episode page. And make sure you subscribe and like. Give us a 5-star on iTunes or Google Play, or I guess what they're calling it now is Apple Podcasts. So that's going to take That's going to take a little bit of getting used to. Or you can listen right from your Amazon Echo on TuneIn Radio with the phrase "Alexa, play Future Commerce Podcast."
I think that we're going to start to have old fogies who are like, "I'm never calling it Apple Podcasts." It's not that to me.
That's not what it was to me. Why back in my day? Actually, you know what? Since we mentioned Alexa. Somebody had a really interesting sort of gripe about how slow the product movement is with Alexa. I know that there's some really interesting stuff happening with like the Echo Look and what's the other one? Show? Echo Show. Mm-hmm. Kind of interesting stuff happening there. And I'm kind of bumping this up. I know we deprioritized it in our news. But aside from those two things and Whisper Mode, there's really no product innovation happening there right now for the people who had the original devices. A lot of rumblings about the new Echo 2 dropping in the next couple weeks. But aside from that, you look at what Google's doing with Google Home, it's kind of mind-blowing.
Hold on here. I do want to get to Google Home, but they did just announce Alexa Calling, which was really cool.
Yeah. I do like that. I kind of like about it is the passive nature. So it doesn't automatically just push something to you and kind of yell in your face, which, was one of the privacy things that I was kind of concerned about anybody being able to just like push messages to you that play out loud. God knows what could happen there.
Going to happen someday.
Yeah, I'm sure. But to what degree, like how that works, like they've really thought that out, and it sort of rolled out in a silent update a couple weeks ago. I really like the way that it functions, and I like the voice to text as well in the Alexa app. So kind of a nice update all around. But it can hold a candle to Google Home's new ability to have six different voice recognitions. Six members of your household by voice can all have tailored experiences with their Google Home device, including the kind of contextual search that you would get by person to sort of learn tastes and like and behavior. Alexa's feeling a little older these days in the light of that. So I think that was kind of interesting. Of course, you know, Google is... They just had I.O., so, you know, they're hot to...
It was just
their
big announcement time. Of course, they've got to try to leapfrog. I mean, I think it's not an accident that that Amazon announced two pretty major devices right before I.O.
You're right. But I do think that we also should be aware that, you know, they're probably getting ready to rev the product, and there's really no reason to do it. There's the only thing that I think at this point that they could make an excuse for a product rev would be, even though the Dot just came out, like the cheaper Dot landed right before Christmas 2016, it'd be a real hard sell to get people to rev all the devices in their home, especially when they're selling them in 5 and 6 a piece in a 5 and 6 pack. I think it'd be a hard sell, but the only thing I can see happening is, you know, Amazon just recently open sourced its, or as licensing or open sourcing its far field microphone technology, the five microphone array sort of thing, which is kind of interesting. But one thing it just does not do well is the crosstalk between rooms. So if you have two devices close to each other, there's no sort of device priority in which one receives the wake word or the command. They both hear you. They both try to act at the same time, where they get confused.
What if we could give them different names?
You can. That's what you do, right? You can assign one Echo, one Amazon, one Alexa, but yeah.
Yeah, three names. Like, what if we could, I can't wait till we can assign our own names.
So that's the other thing. So Google Home also rolled out an over-the-air update recently that gives you the ability to have macros. So, you know, you can queue up a bunch of actions all with one single word. And right now, that is probably my biggest pet peeve with the home automation that we have going on. I know you can do that with if this, then that, but yeah, having something in device. Anyway, this is, we're off base, but the point is starting to feel like there's a little bit of age on the Echo devices, and I'm sure there's a rev coming, but there's got to be something really compelling. Google lapped them already, and I've said now for a year almost that Alexa had an 18-month head start, and it's starting to look like much less of a head start these days. So
maybe. I mean, Alexa, so I think that there's a lot of things happening behind the scenes that aren't like...
We would
like
hope very so.
Visible to the... Well, no, what I mean by that is like, Alexa, like if you remember back to CIS, like it was, it got into everything. Like everything has Alexa.
Yeah, right? CES. Well, yeah. CES. Yeah. Well, that actually takes us right to, it's a nice segue because Alexa in your car is not going to save Alexa in the long run if Google is integrated with everything else you do in your life. You know, like Alexa in your car is compelling, but only because I'm trained right now to say Alexa. But when I put my, you know, I have my phone now is on a magnetic thing on my dash, and I say, okay, Google all the time, you know? So it's interesting. It's interesting. So yeah, having it baked into the car, which actually kind of leads me to my sort of interesting thought of the week, which is, I've recently got a car that has its own data plan. I've chewed through the 3 gigs complimentary data that they give you. And I'm at this point, like, should I renew the data plan on my car? And it's really compelling having that data. And I'll tell you why. So I'm still on Google Fi, and I know that you just recently moved away from it. We can talk about that. But I'm still on Google Fi, which is getting better. And I'm not so disenchanted with it as I was, you know, this time last year. However, this is AT&T. So this isn't it's not belonging to one of the networks that I'm currently on with, you know, T-Mobile or Sprint in my area through their MVNO. But this is a completely different network. And having that redundancy of being able to swap over to the Wi-Fi hotspot in my car when I'm in like a bad area or a bad cell phone signal area or something like that. That's actually come in really handy, especially for like streaming and streaming music in the car. So
do you have to get the data plan through AT&T?
Yeah. As a requirement? So you can get a SIM card. So I've thought about this as well. So I could get a data SIM for Google Fi, which would be a device only SIM or data only SIM, which would be $10 per gig flat. And that would actually be cheaper than AT&T, which wants $15 per month for, I think, 1 or 2 gigs of data. I forget how it works. It doesn't really matter the price. The point is that I'm starting to wonder, like, data plan, separate data plan for all your devices, that just feels so old. And the fact that it's my car also totally kind of feels, doesn't feel great. So I'm sort of... So
T-Mobile... who I just sort of, I put down on our last episode and then promptly switched to. I think that their add a device is like, it's like $5 or $10 a line to add a device with unlimited data.
Hmm. Does that like obligate you into like a 2-year agreement of some kind?
Nope.
I'm sure.
Nope. No contract.
Interesting. Well, I'm interested to hear what people think too. Having a data plan for my car is kind of a new thing for me. I've never had to do that before, but I will say,
I do agree with you though. It's starting to like the old, like we're still running basically on the same plan that was introduced when cell phones came out.
Oh, sure.
Which is like, you have a phone and you might have 2 phones and you might have 3 phones. And then we introduced like,
devices,
like, tablets.
Yeah.
All right, great.
Yeah. That was the next thing. Like, yeah. That was the next thing.
Barely, and it's not that different. Like now it's like, well, hold on here. Like maybe we're going to get most of our data on the go actually.
My kids are finally kind of getting old enough too. Like we got a Nintendo Switch, and they're like playing Mario Kart and stuff. And they're kind of getting to the point where they're old enough to, you know, kind of want to be watching movies or something. Like I can see data being used in the car as like a car hotspot for, you know, for genuinely, you know, useful purposes. But maybe this is just like my own struggle because, well, first I'm old, but second, you know,
not that old, man.
Yeah. But second, it's like the cost conscious, a thing that's ingrained in me now from Google Fi and sort of paying by the gig is maybe just an antiquated and sort of an old fashioned thing. I think almost every single other cell phone provider at this point has unlimited data, but it's an interesting thing. I'm curious what our listeners think of.
I hate to just keep riffing on cell phones because I feel like we've spent enough time on it. But
yeah, 2005 commerce is
I know, the new seriously. Name of the show. The CEO of T-Mobile, and I'm totally spacing on his name at the moment, but he basically like is desperate to win away Verizon's business. So he's actually, no matter where you're at on your payments for your Pixel phone, you can come over to T-Mobile and he'll pay for the whole thing. If you're on Verizon.
Remember anyway. At one point they were giving away T-Mobile stock?
Oh, yeah. They were giving away like a share if you were on the plan. Yeah, that was crazy.
I'm really curious. I'm really curious how that, you know, how that worked out for the people that got a share of T-Mobile stock. But anyway, we digress. I know you made the jump over to Samsung, and that takes us over to Bixby land. And we've not talked a lot about Bixby on this show. I'm kind of curious what your first impressions are of that voice assistant.
I mean, I just barely got to it. And frankly, I've been using Google as my voice assistant because I'm so used to it.
Sure. Okay.
I just got the phone, like just got it. So I haven't even gone through and set up Bixby properly. I did try to use Bixby Vision, which is probably the most intriguing thing about it to me.
Yeah, that was the thing that you tried to demonstrate to me and didn't really quite work. It did notice like what things were in its like picture.
Yeah, like, you could pick up objects.
A shirt, but it didn't necessarily, you know, give you the kind of what is that, you know, shopping suggestions, which I think is like such a hard problem to solve. I don't fault it for that.
I think it's looking for like any kind of like marker or image that it can pick up. like a, you know, a logo or something like that. Probably. but yeah, no, and I'm interested to see how they'll evolve that product. I mean, I'm probably more excited about Google Lens because that will just be integrated into the Google Assistant.
Yeah, that's a new, so for those who didn't watch the IO announcement, give us a little bit of a 2 second download on what Google Lens is.
It's just like Bixby Vision, but it's going to be way more integrated into Google products.
And for those who don't know what Bixby Vision is, what is it? It's just,
it's machine vision for your camera on your phone. So you can hold your camera up and let it scan whatever it's looking at, and it might be able to give you information about it. Whether it's shopping, for shopping or for finding out more information about a specific place you're in. So you might be able to hold it up to like a building and it might tell you something about the building, or if you're in a store, it might tell you, oh, you're at this store. Here's the information about it. but this is actually a really big deal because, right now we get most of our information about clothing and things like that from tags or, products. We have packaging and tags and all kinds of other stuff. And so what this might enable us to do is, have much more in-depth info about products as we're walking through a store.
Like, sure,
you can have basic info about, your butter on the packaging, but then when you scan it with your phone, you find out way more details. Like, oh, it was the this particular butter came from this particular farm instead of cows from this one farm, and provide more transparency again, like just more information for consumers so they can make good decisions or be marketed into buying something.
I'm not really into the whether it's good or not. Like, I think we can always find something useful to do with these things. I just think it's interesting that's where all of the providers have naturally been pushing into is ambient awareness, like awareness of surroundings or awareness, like even though they may not be things that you're necessarily aware of, but like things that are available in ambient, around you in pictures, help them make better decisions for things like ad serve, and sort of maybe, contextually queue up, other search results or serve you, better data around, location. So yeah, it could be interesting stuff. I'm gonna quiz you.
Oh boy.
So do you know what a CPU is?
Yeah.
And what is a CPU?
It's a processor.
Yeah, it's a computer processor, yeah. Right? Right. Do you know what a GPU is?
Yeah, I saw that video of, was it Intel trying to explain what a GPU is?
Yeah, GPU is just, it's a graphics processor, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And it does it a little differently, right? That's built in such a way that it can chew through the things that are hard to process for, generating graphics, right?
Yeah. Did you see that whole like demonstration of like the paintball gun trying to show the difference between a CPU and a GPU?
Yeah.
That was pretty fun.
Yeah, now we should find a way to link that up, even though we don't really do show notes. Here's the quiz. Do you know what a TPU is?
No, I don't.
Have you ever heard of a TPU?
I've heard the term.
So I've never heard of a TPU. I'm not really clued into these sorts of things. But it was all the rage at Google I.O. because they were talking a lot about their new next generation AI training system. TPU is a tensor processor unit, which is a specially designed processor that is specifically offloading the kinds of processing used for Google's TensorFlow, which is their neural net. And what's really interesting about that is that they are supposedly, so they have built the largest neural net, as like the largest, or at least the largest being, employed against commercial commercial use cases. Between Google Brain and DeepMind, which are both their Google AI sort of moonshots or their internal teams that work on this sort of stuff, they've now actually they're employing that TPU system across all of their products now. They've sort of gone last year. They said it was AI first, and now they're kind of implying AI and machine learning to a lot of their products. But what's really interesting about that is they're also making that same excess compute TPU, tensor processor unit capacity available on Google Cloud Engine. So if you're using Google Compute Engine for other things, you could also make use of their TPU system for extremely fast and sort of really highly scalable neural net needs. So making it even more attractive to people who haven't really quite bought into Amazon or are looking for an alternative to Amazon's, Elastic Cloud Compute. So it's kind of an interesting thing. And I feel like that was the thing that was the differentiator out of Google I/O was, sort of giving access to that same thing that powers Google Lens to everybody. Mm-hmm. Anyway, fascinating stuff. And Google keeps going deeper, right? They're now making their own VR, right?
Yes, that's right. No, they announced they're going to have a standalone Daydream headset, where you won't even need a computer, actually, to utilize it. So that's pretty exciting as well. I thought the Daydream was a really pretty VR headset. I didn't actually get a chance to use it because I didn't have a phone that's compatible with it. But I think that the upcoming one will probably both be stylish and very good at what it does.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that Google like stops revving products and actually makes them so that they're available to purchase when you want them.
AKA like put a date on this. They didn't come up with the date.
The Pixel's a year old now, right? Pixel's a year old, still not available in the Google Play Store to buy. That's really frustrating, right? Anyway. Yeah. So that's kind of where they're at. I find that really interesting. Google continuing to sort of push the VR thing. I wish they'd figure out chat, but we've talked a lot about Google. Actually, so can we
use Hangouts, by the way.
Yeah, like, we do. Can we move on? Because I feel like there's some really, really cool stuff coming. I'm really
Let's do it.
So something that caught my attention, speaking of it's like conference season. So Google I/O just wrapped up right before that, Microsoft's big annual conference, which the name escapes me. what is that conference called? Microsoft Conference, like as if, Build. Okay. Yeah. The Build Conference.
That's right.
I think it was out your way. I think it might've been in Seattle.
For sure. It was.
Yeah. And so at the Build conference, they had a lot of really interesting stuff. But the thing that I think took everyone by surprise was the YouTube demo by a developer actually from Florida who created a hologram of Cortana. And linked it up to the Cortana voice, assistant, and then actually animated and created a sort of, hologram representation of the actual like Halo Cortana, speaking, and then actually displaying, in context in that hologram, the same sort of, screen, tooltips that would come along with it. What's interesting is it seems like this developer lives very close to where I live in West Palm Beach. So we're trying to get a hold of him. I'd love to have him on the show. It'd be really cool to kind of get him to turn up. But his name is Jerem Archer, And he's untitled on Twitter, where the I is the number one untitled. But you should see it. He's sort of 3D printed his own rig to display what looks like either a Surface or an iPad above a traditional sort of four-sided hologram prism. And then it's impressive. It also looks like he has a HoloLens on the desk. Definitely a Microsoft developer. He released this at the Build conference. Got a lot of fanfare around it. But you should see the demo because it's mind-blowing. It's
really unbelievable. Yeah. Like, yep. I mean, we've talked about holograms on the show before.
Sure.
And
well, you've talked about them. I've just laughed about them.
That's true. But
incredible.
You know, there's quite a bit of tech out there right now. The thing about holograms is, so I'm told, they're actually not that difficult to actually make.
No. Like, I don't think so.
Basic holograms, not hard to make. Now, like real-time rendering of holograms, like I think maybe it's a little bit harder, like a video or whatever it is that you're trying to animate can be a little bit more difficult probably. But I think the exciting thing about holograms is, I mean, this is just another display, right? It's
sure.
It's another way to view things. It's sure. Just, it gives us a better experience, makes things more relatable potentially. And definitely when you're watching this, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm in the future. Like I live in the future.
it reminds me of, like it isn't, you know, holograms have existed for a very, very long time, right? Like they're, I don't know if you remember, there was this video game back in like the 90s called Time Traveler. It was like a Laserdisc video game. Do you remember that?
No.
Oh my gosh. So it was one of these sort of, you remember Dragon's Lair? You ever see that game where it was one of those, like you press a button when the button comes up on screen, like it was a reflex game. And that's like, if you mispress the button, then the story ends, you die, you got to pump another quarter. But the, what was really interesting about it is that the gimmick for Time Traveler was that it used a concave mirror for the holographic effect. So it sort of looked from a particular vantage point like it was, you know, images that were sort of freestanding in 3D that were sort of just appearing in space. So yeah, I don't think the actual physical let's make something appear like it's right there hologram part is the hard part. I think, you know, it's just it's a completely different UI. A different medium requires a lot more sort of gear and vantage points.
Well, I think the thing that's cool about holograms are their shared experiences. I don't know if we just talked about this like sure. offline no, we didn't. Or if we talked about it on the show.
I don't think we did. No.
But yeah, like you look at different like augmented reality and virtual reality. So augmented reality is interesting because, you know, you can share the experience, but you both have to be one, like on the same filter. And two, you know, have the technology to, you know, actually do it. And then VR can be a shared experience or it can be alone depending off your network. But a hologram is shared no matter where you are. So
right,
it's you know, I think you can sort of augment reality, if you will, with holograms, and then people don't necessarily have to have devices to experience that augmentation. So. You know, if I recall correctly, I'm remembering way back now, and I haven't been to Disneyland in forever, which looks like Disneyland's getting some major overhaul. But did you ever go when they had the Indiana Jones ride and then like Indiana Jones sort of comes down? You can sort of, he appears at different places throughout the ride.
No, so I've never been to Disneyland. I've only ever been to Walt Disney World.
But, yeah, of course. You live right there.
Right.
Yeah, so I think that was a hologram. If I recall correctly, they used a hologram to do that. And that was like years ago. That was
striking.
Like
it was, but it was probably like a kind of an incredible experience, like the first time you see it.
It was right? Super cool. Yeah.
Like anything.
And so that's another thing I think, you know, Saku kind of mentioned this to some degree, but back on our first interview with her, sort of the arcade experience to these new technologies. And I'd be really interested to see how theme parks and other like shared experiences, like even like retail stores, sort of create experiences, or if there will be new places popping up to allow us to leverage these new experiences so that we can share the cost of the technology and have these beautiful curated experiences for us. That might actually be sort of the next step. One thing that was really cool, we talked about sort of digital converging with physical, with Google Lens and Bixby. Nike just launched a track where you could actually race yourself.
Actually, this is really interesting. Carry on with that, because I want to find the story that I read about this. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory, but my point is like,
was it the in-store experience or like, what was it? It was somewhere.
It was like a track. I think it wasn't in the US. I think it was down somewhere. It might've been in the Philippines. Maybe I can't remember for sure. But yeah, maybe look up the story. And I was just kind of illustrating a point, which is that some of this technology it's definitely there in terms of us being able to have new experiences and do things we've never done before, but it's going to take bigger companies and bigger players to put together these experiences for us to share as a group, you know, as a population, before some of these things are going to filter down to the general public. Actually, let's talk about that a little bit more as well. Actually, a good friend of mine, a former coworker of mine, just got hired at a company that is working on VR, basically feeling. So you can actually put on a suit.
Yeah, haptic.
And feel.
Yeah.
Yeah, haptic. Yes, thank you. Haptic suit. I think it's called Axon VR. Gosh, I can't believe I'm. Axon VR. And they've released a haptic suit, which is I don't know how much it's going for right now, but I could definitely see this becoming like something that people pull into stores or put into an arcade type experience, or like, you know, like a something you can pay for an experience. And then we'll all have access to this, and go use it in a more general sense.
The only thing I can think of that would be useful, but I shall digress. I will not go there. Future Commerce is brought to you by DotMailer. DotMailer is used by thousands of marketers around the world. It has quick and easy campaign creation with a world-class intuitive interface. The DotMailer team is always on hand, from email creation, creative, and delivery to dedicated consultancy helping you build your own success story. DotMailer is built to play well with others. You can build your own marketing cloud by extending DotMailer or integrating it with your existing e-commerce and business platforms. Become a smarter, faster, better marketer and create sophisticated and measurable campaigns with DotMailer. Go to dotmailer.com/futurecommerce to start your free trial today, and be sure to use the offer code FUTURECOMMERCE for 20% off DotMailer packages. Thanks again to DotMailer for supporting Future Commerce. Link is the best way to get your customers coming back to buy again. Link's Cortex AI platform creates rich relationships with every customer at every touchpoint on every platform. From Magento to Shopify, Hybris and Demandware, over 300 logistic and reverse logistic carriers around the world are integrated with Link. Link brings your brand to where customers are on Facebook Messenger, Alexa, SMS, and more. Let Link add the power of artificial intelligence to your business. For a limited time, Future Commerce listeners can claim an exclusive trial offer for 30 days free of Link Cortex. Sign up today and visit them online at letslink.com/podcast. That's letslink.com/podcast. Yeah, I do think that is a thing that's, you know, it's interesting that, you know, people working in that space. I think that's definitely coming. What I'm kind of fascinated with the Nike experience, which you can actually find I think it was on The Verge where I just saw it. But it is, you know, you can run against these LED walls. And so you're interacting digitally with you're the ghost of yourself sort of running against you, which is cool. But I think that that's really cool because, you know, you talked about shared experience. I think that's what's interesting about this is it's an experience that can sort of be, you know, that onlookers can also experience. Whereas the haptic thing is like, it's still that it's kind of, you know, catering to that, the virtual experience that VR is,
certainly,
which is, yeah, no you doubt. Know, personal only. But I think it's really, really interesting that, you know, it seems that shoe brands are the ones, footwear is what's really pushing the, envelope here. Don't you find that kind of interesting?
Interesting. Yeah, totally interesting.
And Nick Vu,
yeah,
I mean, actually, in our previous episode also, you know, sort of seemed to hint that, Adidas, continued to push the envelope and had been for some, you know, number of years. They've had VR experiences in their stores for years.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah. It is interesting. I mean, and they're also like pushing all kinds of other stuff. This gets back to a conversation we had, I think, three episodes ago about how retail is actually pushing forward our shared or our general experience, you know, life experience and sort of pushing forward technology in ways and making it available to us in ways that we've never been able to experience it before.
Right.
This is a big deal. Like, I'm glad we're talking about it because, I haven't heard many people like, it's funny. We always think, okay, big business, like, you know, or at least our generation's like, oh, big business, not awesome. It's like, wait a minute, hold on here. These big businesses are actually the ones that are driving forward some of these, groundbreaking technologies and ways that we're going to experience the world that you would never expect that they would. Granted, they're selling stuff to us in the process, and that I guess that's sort of the point.
yeah, and they should, right? Like
they should.
Yeah,
they should. I agree. Yeah.
Interesting, actually. Speaking of that, and pushing technology forward, I believe. Let's see. Nike just recently also tried to break the 2-hour marathon record. Yeah. Did you see? It was like sort of a tragic failed attempt. Eliud Kipchoge, Kenyan runner, they set it up sort of amazingly to do everything that they really could to try to break the 2-hour marathon record. Unfortunately, came in at 2 hours and 24 seconds. Gosh, that's heartbreaking.
Crazy.
What was incredible about the way that they did the 2-hour,2-hour marathon was, well, first of all, that's a 4-minute, 35-second mile all the way through, which is just unbelievable. What a pace, you know, that the human body would have to endure. But the way to do that, I mean, really the only way to do that is through technology. So, you know, they had pacers, you know, set up for every half a mile or so to run, you know, and keep pace. And then they had, pace vehicles as well. But, you know, Nike has these new, supposedly the fastest shoes ever made that were specifically created just for this purpose. And you know, they had like windbreakers trying to sort of break the wind, trying to set up this perfect, environment basically make it possible. And it's all technology that's enabling all of that, right? Like you need technology to make all of that happen. It's just an interesting thing. And still, you know, kind of reaching up at the end of the day, it's the limit of the human body. Anyway, very, very.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. But yeah, I love it. Nice. Yeah. Well, I think,
Anyway, footwear.
Yeah. Footwear. Exactly.
Shocking. shocking. In fact, you know, I'm getting into, the world of more body data, you know, with, I'm doing a lot more running recently and of really becoming, you know, kind of enjoying that. I'm shocked at how many, footwear brands actually have connected shoes, you know, and, you know, Under Armour and a few others all have these sort of, you know, they're not just step trackers. They do all kinds of things, but they also tend to tell you like at what point you should start thinking about replacing your shoes. And it's just an interesting mixture of technology in that space.
I talked about this with Brian Eisenberg. It was a really interesting conversation. And like, it's funny because like connected clothing or smart clothing has been sort of on the horizon for a long time. And it's just finally starting to pick up some steam. It's still on the fringe. Like only larger companies like Under Armour and Nike are really pushing it. It's not like there's technology out there that is easily accessible for smaller brands. Although that's starting to happen now.
Yeah. And I mean, it's been. I remember 10 years ago, Nike had an insole insert for the original iPhone or for the iPod. I think it might have been for the iPod at one point as a step tracker. For an insole, connected insole. Do you remember that? Nike running. That. I don't remember what it was. Crazy.
iPod. Like,
do you remember iPods?
Oh, geez.
Interesting. But, anyway, iPod's no longer valuable. You know what is valuable these days?
Oh yeah, I do.
Yeah. Data.
Data. Exactly.
Data.
World's most valuable resource now.
Yeah. No longer oil. World's most valuable resource, according to The Economist anyway, is data. Story coming out of The Economist kind of thinking about how we get into regulation and talking about, you know, the, you know, sort of mind-bending profits that companies like Amazon, Apple, Facebook, Microsoft, and Alphabet, Google's parent company, are all kind of, you know, just cranking out profit, $25 billion in net profit in the first quarter of 2017. Amazon capturing over half of all dollars spent online in America. But what's incredible about that is that these companies are basically almost wholly completely unregulated. When you look at the amount of regulation that goes into other businesses of comparable size, really, the only difference is that this is not a commoditized resource, right? This is not a resource, a natural resource that's regulated in any way.
I loved Chris Albin's tweet just from this past April, when he said, 2007, you are the product. 2017, you are the training data.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. It's interesting. I do think, you know, we're so far past, you know, do you remember back, Microsoft was like on a 15-year bent with antitrust lawsuits and,
oh yeah. And what a joke.
and where is that nowadays? You know, where is that happening? I know that Google has been faced in, especially in the EU, with antitrust, you know, sort of crackdowns and regulation, but it's all but absent in the United States of America.
In the US. Yeah. I think the EU is still making moves, but,
Let's see how long the EU actually lasts, you know, at this pace. I'm kind of getting into this space of like, are we okay with this? Like I'm trying to wonder what this signals, you know, really regulation should bring, it would have a lot of negative effects, right? Like the inability for the company to sort of, you know, compete and innovate against its rivals or smaller upstarts. So it definitely could also slow the pace of innovation, and that's certainly not a track that I think any of us want to go down right now, especially when we're in a pretty decent economic climate. Like, who wants to put the brakes on that?
Yeah.
But just interesting stuff. You know, who was, is it Apple about to be the first $1 trillion company, the world's first $1 trillion company, where it's, you know, coming up on it, has an $800 billion market cap. at the moment. It's we're gonna see it in our lifetimes. It's gonna happen
easily.
Terrifying.
And it's not going to be because of runaway inflation.
No, and it's also not going to be because of all of the incredible, you know, sure, Apple's done some innovation, but they're not innovating in the space anywhere like their competitors are. You know, Apple's, which is interesting because you listen to the naysayers and they'll tell you how bad Siri is. They'll tell you how bad their devices are or have
well, didn't are we just right talk now. About AirPods, like
yeah, but AirPods has incredible consumer sentiment, right? Like they've got an incredible consumer rating on the AirPods. So it's a 98% satisfaction rate, I think, is what we talked about on the last episode.
Let's take a step back. Apple isn't actually often on the forefront, like. They usually sure. find stuff that's out there that can be done way, way better and recognize the market opportunity and then do it way, way better.
Yeah. Well, I think they're going to have to do more in this space, right? What is Apple doing with AI and machine learning right now that's sort of pushing the envelope? It makes me, you know, not even signaling. Like, at least Google talks about stuff that they never actually do anything with.
Here's right. what they're doing. They're letting Google be on the iPhone.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
No.
I think is it Google Voice that's going to be available on the iPhone now?
Oh, I did see that. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Apple's contribution.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, well, thank you, Apple. Thank you for allowing Google to continue to exist in this world that you basically own. You know, it's interesting. I do hope that these companies continue to grow and innovate, but we really and employ people and create better worlds for us to live in for our kids. But I'm a little bearish on their ability to be you know, they all have stockholders to answer to, every one of them. And that's sort of the scary thing is that you can't be altruistic and you know, just on your own. You have to, I don't know, you have to answer to the stockholders at some point, and you have to turn it. You have to turn profit. And
sure,
scary.
Well, so yeah, there is absolute truth to that. However, also on the flip side. We still have an insane amount of innovation going on outside of these big companies. I mean, if you look at like sentient.ai, great example of that. We had Jonathan Epstein on
sure.
back on episode 14, I think it was, or 15. They're doing some really cool stuff with AI. And there are many other companies. We had Body Labs on. They're doing stuff that no one else is doing.
Sure.
There's still plenty of space to get out there and do something that no one else is doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, there is still the barrier to entry is still low enough where I feel, at least in America, where like, yeah, maybe you can't get into the phone business too easily, but you can get into creating innovative software that does stuff that no one else has thought of.
Yeah. That's you're spot on there. We're, you know, we're in this place of lock-in to a scant few vendors, which I think, you know, you go back to the Teddy Roosevelt Trust Busters days and he's rolling over in his grave. You know, this was the, you know, at least with cable and telephone operators, we had, you know, regional monopolies and not, you know, global monopolies. But that's all we have anymore. The internet has brought us all closer together, but it's done it under the roof of four or five major companies. And that's, you know, great for AI training data. And it's not so great, I think, for consumer choice and for transparency of what exactly is going on with all of our, what's in our best interest.
I don't know about that, man. If you look at like the what it costs to build to buy a fully functioning smartphone right now, I mean, actually, Google just released their Go platform as like a down market play. It's a new operating system.
Oh yeah, we didn't talk about that. Yeah,
it's down market play, and it's gonna hopefully make more devices available, or more give people more access to high tech devices or software than ever before. They've talked about their next billion users, right?
Yeah.
And so I actually kind of feel like, you know, in terms of accessibility and choice, there still is a lot out there. I mean, open source is also helping with this a ton. Now, making sure the right people get compensated for how this stuff rolls out, it might be a different story.
Yeah, that's a whole other topic, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Anyway,
interesting.
I hear your concerns. Would Teddy Roosevelt be rolling over in his grave? I'm not totally sure that he would with these companies. He might be rolling over in his grave for completely different reasons, which I won't get into.
Yeah, I don't know how beloved people hold old Theo these days. Hey, listen, we've got a couple other really cool stories here, but I do think just as an aside, it's sort of really important. It's important that we remind you or we tell you. I think this is our announcement about shop.org. We are going to be live podcasting at shop.org.
Super excited about that. This will be our first year at shop.org. As Future Commerce. Our first year broadcasting live as an official part of the show.
Yep.
Come bring the whole company. Bring the whole company along.
Why don't you?
And listen in.
You know, in the realm of shows or conferences, this is not the most expensive one to attend. In fact, I think they've sort of reworked this show a little bit. And so despite what you may have heard in the past, I think this one's going to be a really, really cool one. So we want you to come out. It's in LA. This year.
Who doesn't want to go to LA?
I want to go to LA.
It's going to be beautiful.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
In September. Yeah.
Yeah. So what are the dates?
It is September, I want to say 26th through 28th. Is that right? Let me double check that actually. I should know this off.
You should know this off the top of your head. It's 25 through 27.
25 through 27. That was close.
Yeah. So, come on out and make sure you look us up. We're going to be podcasting from the podcast booth. So are Jason and Scott from the Jason and Scott Show, who are just recently on Future Commerce. And we want to make sure we see you there. And, you know, we'll keep a lookout because we'll probably be putting together a few little events that week for some meet and greets. So it'll be really nice.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah. Why don't you close this out? There's a couple little other neat little stories that I think we pulled out for the week as well.
Yeah. Oh yeah. This is pretty cool. I know that this is sort of off topic, but, Volvo's going all electric all the way, baby.
Yeah. I was sort of shocked to read this myself. But I think it's like no more diesel. Electric is the future, which is incredible.
It is incredible, yeah. It kind of plays back to like car tech that we were talking about a little bit, and just like how we think about cars in the future. That will be very. I'm excited to see like how that actually plays out. And the other thing that we kind of talked about covering on the show that I thought was really interesting was this actually we just referenced Sentient and how they've got some, you know, basically a hedge fund that allows AI to make autonomous purchasing. There's also, this is a story you found on Vice. AI is now basically mining hundreds of thousands of news articles per hour for stock tips. And it's predicting stock prices with 76% accuracy.
I wonder how many of those are just looking for Trump statements and sort of trying to predict market swings based on.
The one thing that they kind of like, this is obviously unbelievable, right? I mean, I don't think there's anything out there that's ever been out there like this before. But the concern that I might have is like this, I could see people maybe gaming this a little bit. Like, if you put out the right types of articles, you know, you might be able to create a system in which you influence AI, because it's not sort of understanding like what what's legitimate and what's not, if mining through hundreds of thousands of articles. Now, maybe there is some sort of like fail safe in there for that, but I can't help but think that there's going to be a way to game this that people are going to start to take advantage of.
We have to tie it into our last story, right? So traditionally, you would have certain Wall Street analysts that would be watching particular companies, right? They sort of give you the buy or sell rating, right? Like recently, there was a story of. I used to watch Etsy really close since the IPO. Never actually did anything after the IPO. It was really sad. But I was a big fan of Etsy prior to the IPO. But there's like 45 Wall Street analysts that watch Etsy, right? And 41 of them have rated it a buy. Well, there's 4 that have rated it a sell. And just watching their analysis alone would kind of be an interesting thing for an AI to sort of, you know, make decisions, purchase decisions based on that. But, you know, Volvo making an announcement about the electric car being the future, you know, that's the kind of thing that I think that we used to pay 10, 12, 40, 50, 100 people to all watch and care about. And now it can be automated by by a couple TPUs, you know, and that's kind of an interesting shift in the way that we place value on things in the stock market is more and more based on public news and PR, right? It's what it comes down to.
Maybe that's always been true, but yeah.
I think it's always been true. Yeah, I think it definitely has always been true, but it's always been true as filtered by people,
right?
You know, who you know, we ostensibly have some. You know, some expertise to filter the good from the bad.
So what happens if, like, let's say let's just pretend for a minute that this data gets publicized to everybody. And everyone can see where people like, isn't that a little bit of a chicken and an egg thing right there? Like, everyone knows what the price is going to be. And then because of everything that everyone's saying, and then I don't know, man, it starts to get a little bit crazy.
Yeah, well, I think that's kind of just how money works nowadays anyway. speaking of money working and sort of confidence, I'm going to start a new segment called Bitcoin Watch. Bitcoin is going on a tear right now on the heels of the WannaCry ransomware. Last I checked, I think Bitcoin was somewhere at like $2,200, you know, $2,200. Sorry, today, right now, 2537, up 6.75% today alone. So, wow, gosh, 26. Oh, it's up. Sorry. Closed of market was 9.4% increase, and nearly a, oh my gosh. Holy cow. It's like nearly a 6-fold increase in the last year. So altcoins definitely on the rise as well. Our friend, Brian Romilly, definitely he has the Around the Coin podcast.
Yeah.
Frequent on. He's sort of called the continued rise of that as well. Something to keep a watch on, because I think it all, again, the value that we place on things like stocks and money, is really only held up by our belief in it. And so, our belief has to be, we have to have some faith and trust in those things as having value for them to actually have real value.
Yeah, it's a really good point. When we start to lose confidence in something, that's when it starts to devalue.
Sure.
I totally agree. Speaking of blockchain, did you see that Toyota announced this can use blockchain to sort of help it with gather driving data and which will steer driverless cars?
No, I hadn't seen that. No, where give me a little more information about that.
Yeah. I mean, so Chris Bollinger, who's their chief officer of strategic innovation at Toyota, basically said that, I'll just quote it, hundreds of billions of miles of human driving data is going to be needed to, or likely will be needed, he says maybe needed to develop safe and reliable autonomous vehicles. And he goes on to say then blockchains and distributed ledgers may enable pooling data from vehicle owners, fleet managers, and manufacturers to shorten the time for reaching this goal. There, you know, and basically goes to say it's gonna actually make it possible. The problem with autonomous driving right now is that it's really hard to collect all the data that's necessary to make it actually safe. And so that's why we've had these autonomous cars driving around, you know, for, you know, hundreds of thousands and millions of miles all over in states that don't have massively populated areas. And we still don't have enough data. So essentially he's saying they're going to start, I think they're going to start building this in, and then customers will be able to give their insurance companies increased transparency to basically reduce the fraud and reduce fraud and give them access to safe or driving data to measure safe driving habits, which essentially is like once you opt into that, that's going to start, I think, feeding Toyota data about driving.
Yeah. And who knows, like, you know, if you saw the movie Arrival, and the sort of the Deus Ex Machina, right? That whole that whole thing toward the end of the movie, which is, you know, essentially us being able to have shared information in a worldwide platform to sort of conquer a very hard to solve problem. That is the, you know, that is the ne plus ultra. That is what we are. You know, as a human species, only we are capable of would be that sort of distributed sharing of data. And if, hey, listen, if we can come together as a world, as a human species over, you know, something for us to share freely data for a common good, which I think we can all agree, you know, self-driving cars would limit traffic fatalities. They would, you know, all but eliminate traffic congestion. It would be a new era for, you know, humankind. I think it is a worthy thing for us to pursue. I mean, it would be an incredible thing if that's what we can unite over. But it's going to take, you know, it's going to take a commitment to open source and sharing of data. And yeah, blockchain is one way to accomplish that. I kind of like that Toyota is driving that.
Thanks, Lynn. That's about as the futures I've ever heard you. That's a good way to end this episode.
Yeah, yeah.
That
stop,
is Philip Jackson.
Stop me right
that
there.
That is Philip Jackson preaching the future.
You know, I'm usually bearish about things like this, but on this one, I'm feeling pretty good. I like.
Yeah,
it.
They're also doing this in partnership with MIT, which is really cool. So I think there is definitely a high chance of success. Toyota's traditionally been very good at accomplishing things they set out to accomplish, and MIT is also kind of in that boat. And so I'm pretty stoked about this. I agree with you.
I love it. I love it. Brian, you're the best, man. I love doing this with you.
Another great.
You're luring me over episode. To your side, over to the light side. I like it.
Yes. Yeah.
It's been a great episode. Thank you for spending time with us. Thank you for spending the last hour with us. Wow, where does the time go? And listening to Future Commerce. And we want your feedback. We need you involved in today's show. So make sure to get that to us at futurecommerce.fm. We have also submitted ourselves to the Podcast Awards. We want you to vote for us for the 2017 Podcast Awards. So if you go over to podcastawards.com, hit the People's Choice link and submit Future Commerce, that would be very, very much appreciated. We'd love to win an award. One of these would be really, really cool. But even if you don't award us with your favorite podcast vote on the Podcast Awards, we would like you to award us with a 5-star on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, whatever the heck it's called these days, or over there on Google Play with, you
Come
know,
on, you all, old fogey.
Yeah, all 5 of you that listen on Google Play. And also, you know, make sure that you never miss a show by subscribing. because we want to keep you around. Anyway, hey, until next time, thank you for listening. Bye.
Bye. Keep looking towards the future.